Welcome to the Rams Writer Podcast.
Now Kamil Jóźwiak, there it is. Kamil Jóźwiak's first goal for Derby County. It's a stunner.
Got the flick, and it's Kazim Richards who pokes it home. And Derby County are in dreamland after 25 minutes.
Knight on the follow-up. Derby lead at the Den.
Up in the air, in swing at Etheridge. Drops it, and it's in from Bielik. And Christian Bielik scores his first goal for Derby.
Hello and welcome to the Rams Writer Podcast with me, your host, Simon. 1884, Derby County were first established. One of the founding members of the Football League. 100 plus years later, are they on the brink of extinct? It's where we're at the minute. On Wednesday, Derby County officially went into administration. A lot of emotion was shown by different fans, me included. A lot of anger, a lot of sadness. You never think it's going to happen to your club. Whether you've followed us since the days of the baseball ground, from the days of Pride Park, from even more recent times than that, it doesn't matter. You're still a fan. It still affects you. And I think it's something that every single fan never thinks is going to happen to their club. And when it does, it's horrendous because there's a lot of questions that you want to ask. You know, there's a lot of whys, who's, and what fors. We have seen some great times with Derby County Football Club. Some sad times. You know, that's both in recent and later history. But one thing that's happened so far since the announcement of administration is the fans have come together as one for the first time in a very long time. There is a bond between this fan. There seems to be a bond appearing between the fans and the team again, something that we've lost. Maybe having this thing, this administration, going through this really tough time was something that we needed to really rebuild, because we've said it for quite a few seasons now. This team needs to rebuild. There was a lot of players from a lot of different managers from the past, a lot of high wages, and it's caught up with us finally. Now, I know Mel Morris had a lot of blame for this, rightly or wrongly. It's all a matter of opinion. But maybe this could potentially be the best thing that's happened to us if we don't get liquidated. Maybe we just need to reset, restart. Now, there's all sorts of possibilities that could happen. On the positive, there is people there willing to take us over. On the negative, we don't know exactly who they are and what money they've got. There's a lot of questions, I guess, that fans were asking. You know, it's not every day you go into administration. It's one of them that, I guess, it's something you never really think about. Oh, what's the processes? How long does it take? You know, what could happen? What's the worst case scenario? What's the best case scenario? Points deductions and all that. Well, today then I'm joined by Scott Bebbington, and he's a licensed insolvency practitioner and a chartered accountant at PKF Francis Clark. Obviously a solvency firm. So he's going to talk us through questions that we might want to answer. So he's joining me now. Scott, welcome to the show. Thank you for giving up your time and being here for us to obviously talk to us about the administration process. First of all, can we just ask about you? I mean, obviously it says, I've said you're an insolvency practitioner, a chartered accountant. What does it mean by an insolvency practitioner?
Yeah, so an insolvency practitioner is basically someone who has gone through, passed some sort of specialist insolvency exams and can be appointed to basically advise companies that are in financial distress and actually be appointed as an administrator or a liquidator to actually run that company to try and achieve a rescue scenario. And we'll go into some more detail on that, some of the questions as we kind of go through. But it's basically someone who is qualified to act. Yeah. And helping companies that are in financial distress.
Brilliant. So I might as well start then. What is the administration process then when it comes to sort of football clubs?
Yeah, so basically it's a process that provides some breathing space to a club or a company or a club in this scenario. The primary objective of the administration is to use this space to come up with a rescue for the business and try and actually save that company. There are some secondary and sort of third objectives. The second objective is to get a better outcome for creditors than what would happen if we get in a liquidation scenario where the company or the club in this case would close in its entirety. And the third objective is to realise the assets of the club for the benefit of the secured and preferential creditors, which are specific classes in the Insolvency Act. So that's what administration sort of is. What happens is the administrators, so Quantuma, they are appointed and they are now effectively in charge and managing the affairs of Derby County. They won't deal with the on-pitch stuff. That will still be left to run as it would normally do, but there will be all the backroom decisions now go to them. The directors don't have the power to make any decisions related to the club. Their primary duties, they've got a number of duties under the Insolvency Act, but their main responsibility duties, are to realise as much as they can for the assets of the club, to pay the creditors of the company, and to investigate what's gone on and why any company or the club in this scenario is in the situation it's in. What sort of led to that demise, and has there been any wrongdoing by those who are in charge of the club, which could potentially lead to what we call financial recompense for creditors, so sort of compensation to creditors if payments are made out to various people. But the primary duty for the administrators is to act in the best interest of all the creditors of the company. And what I think we'll see is the likely strategy is going to be to sort of trade this club on for a period of time as they try and find a buyer for the club to then come on, take the club going forward and hopefully bring it so out of the administration process and give it a chance to actually have a sustainable future.
Oh, right. Okay. So with obviously you mentioned obviously creditors and things like that, I mean, is there a sort of way like who they choose, like who gets paid first, second, et cetera, things like that? Or is it sort of who's owed the most, et cetera? Is it, what's the sort of order they get paid in?
Yeah, so there's this order of priority in an insolvency. In a typical sort of non-football insolvency, you have your secured creditors. These are creditors that have got charged registered at the company's house. So in the case of Derby County, you've got MSD Holdings have fixed charge at company's house. So they're sort of paid first out of what the realisation is for that fixed charge asset. Then you have the costs of the insolvency process. That will include the fees of the administrators, sort of things like legal fees associated with the sale of any assets and costs of kind of running the club up to a point of sale. You then have what are called the preferential creditors, and this is typically employees for their arrears of wages, holiday pay outstanding, and any sort of pension contributions potentially. You have a new category of creditors called secondary preferential creditors, and this is primarily HMRC for certain taxes. This actually came in quite recently, I say quite recently, it was December last year. And I think that's quite an interesting point in this case, because obviously the tax debt from to HMRC from Derby is reportedly quite high. Then you have the floating charge creditors. This is another creditor of a charge at company's house, but over all assets of the company, rather than a specific asset, like say a mortgage on a property. And then after that, you have your unsecured creditors, and these are your general sort of suppliers, you know, the people who supply the matchday food and, you know, other sort of people who will generally supply the club are the unsecured creditors. So they're paid at the very bottom of the order of priority. And where the football insolvency is quite different is you have this class called football creditors. These are amounts that are owed to the league, owed to players, manager, and then transfer fees. And these are actually paid as preferential creditors in the insolvency. So that preferential creditor pot is now significantly bigger. And the logic behind that was to sort of stop what we call the domino effect of an insolvency, which is where obviously one club goes into administration, owing another club a significant transfer fee, and that club then falls over and you have sort of dominoes falling as a result of it. So that's why that's come in.
Right, with you, I see. So just on that then, I mean, obviously, we hear a lot, well, we hear Mel say, oh yeah, the best thing for the club would be administration. And people say, oh yeah, well, a potential buyer is going to get it cheaper. But I mean, who loses out in all this situation? You know, because obviously, I mean, we've seen that, well, we've heard that Mel has spent or chucked 200 million of his own money into the club. You know, is he going to get that back? Because we're still hearing that he's a creditor, if you like. So will he get any sort of money out of this, even though he's put it into administration himself?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I think the starting point would be, obviously, MSD have holdings, have their charges over the sort of company assets. So they would potentially be in line to get paid out of any of the fixed charge assets that are sold. And I think there is some leasehold property from memory. And also they get, after sort of the preferential creditors and secondary preferential creditors, they would then be paid under their floating charge. Although I have seen, I think someone mentioned on social media that he's talking about potentially waiving that sort of debt that's owed to him, which will obviously enhance the reduce actually what needs to be paid for the club, because it's one less debt to pay off. But in terms of who actually loses out, I mean, short term, the club obviously loses out significantly, because you've got the 12-point deduction automatically. You've now got a situation where there is uncertainty about what's going on. To actually fund trading the club up to a point where a buyer is going to be found, you will potentially see players being sold, and you might see players who would potentially fetch a much higher market price, a much higher price, sorry, when a club's not in administration, being sold at a lower value, because it is administration. It's about almost getting cash in to trade the club to a point where you can have a buyer. You know, fans always want to lose out, because a club that they've supported for many years and are passionate about, you know, there is a sort of cloud of uncertainty. And, you know, 12-point deduction, could they potentially get relegated down to League One as a result of that? Staff will lose out, because there's likely to be potentially some redundancies, maybe some cost-cutting measures in place to, again, minimise the outgoings in this period up to finding a new buyer to make it more feasible to actually trade the club on for a short period of time. And ultimately, creditors will lose out, because there's going to be a significant bad debt here. And even if a buyer is found for the club, it's unlikely that those creditors are going to get all their money back. You know, the football creditor rule is the minimum is 25p in the pound. They've got to be paid to avoid this further deduction. So you're still looking at 75 pence in the pound being written off. And if you've, you know, extend the credit over a long period of time, which you might do because you're a local supplier and, you know, you're a Derby County fan, for example, then you are faced with, you know, quite a significant hit at a difficult time.
I was wondering what that, because I keep seeing that phrase, this 25 to 35p in a pound. I take it, obviously, whoever comes in, they won't be paying back the full amount that's owed, but they'll be paying essentially just a fraction of that, if you like. If you're saying it's at 25 pence to the pound, does that mean they'll only be paying a sort of a quarter then of what's owed?
Yeah, so that's the minimum. So effectively what you have is the administrators are going to try and get as much money as they can for the assets of Derby County. And if there is, you know, sort of a bidding war and the price does go up and up and there's enough to pay more than 25p in the pound to the creditors, then they will obviously get more in that scenario. But the minimum amount to avoid this further 15-point deduction is that you have to have paid your football creditors in full, and then you have to have paid at least 25p in the pound to your unsecured creditors, or 35p in the pound if it's over a three-year period.
Right, okay, with you. So obviously, I don't know if you've seen, but is this normal? Because obviously you look at the Derby County Football Club, that's who they are in Companies House. So there's been a lot of fans going through Companies House on Twitter. Mm-hmm. It's like, there's a lot of people trying to be accountants, but you know what I mean? You're thinking, do you know what you're talking about or not? But Derby seems to be like separated. So I think it's about five different sort of businesses, like Sevco 5112. I think there's a couple of Jalor Nucos as well in there. Now, do these individual companies like sort of have individual files where the debts are owing, or is it just all under one umbrella? So will those companies be shut off totally, and it would just be, let's put it all into one sort of fund and pay that off?
Yeah, no, I get what you mean about sort of trying to get to the bottom of my search for Companies House, and even I was having a look through when it all got announced, and it is it's not an easy one to follow, and I was obviously an accountant and an IP myself. So essentially, each company that goes into an insolvency process into administration is a separate sort of file, if you will. So the assets of Derby County Football Club can only be sold and used to pay the creditors of Derby County Football Club. The assets of, say, Gellor, I think it's Gellor 203, can only be used to pay creditors of that company. The only way that might not be the case if you have sort of cross guarantees, so where Derby County Football Club have guaranteed debts owed to another company, then assets of Derby County could be potentially used to pay that debt, but it would normally be still within that order of priority in an insolvency process that I talked about earlier.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've mentioned obviously assets a lot. I think the biggest asset a football club can have is its stadium. Now, Mel Morris owns that stadium, but I believe MSD sort of have a loan against that stadium. How does that work? You know, is this going to be sort of a difficult, I suppose, administration period compared to other football clubs because we don't actually own our stadium?
I think so, and I think potentially the key issue there is if you're coming in to try and take over the club from the administration process, you want that certainty of, you know, being able to play at Pride Park and have some sort of future there. And if the administrators aren't the ones in charge of that stadium and the ones selling it to the new owner, there is that uncertainty. You have to then go and negotiate with whoever does own the stadium. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, is it Mel Morris?
Yeah, Mel Morris owns the stadium.
So he owns the stadium. So you basically have to then negotiate with him for some form of lease to actually then use the stadium for the club. So you almost have to not only go through the process of buying the assets through the administrators, but then sort of at the same time, have a new lease in place with the owner of the stadium. And if you can't have one without the other, so that makes it slightly more difficult. I think you're then coming back to, would Mel Morris, as the owner of the stadium who's put this club into administration, want to then see a buyer go away by not giving them a lease to actually play at Pride Park? And I think that would be a very difficult thing to rationalise.
I mean, me and a friend came up with a theory. I mean, potentially, obviously, reading reports and stuff, obviously, he's not said a great deal. I did find one report. He said he would try and obviously sell the stadium. Even in his interview on Radio Derby last week, he said that, you know, he would make nothing off the stadium. So obviously, he technically bought the stadium at, I think it was 81 million or something like that. If he sold it for that or less, say about, say he sold it for 80 million to a new sort of potential owner, could they, in theory, write an agreement that the new owner gives him 80 million for the stadium? But then what actually happens is with that 80 million, we're hearing that the debt is around about 60 million. We've not actually confirmed that the figures haven't been officially released, what all the debts are and everything that's owed to each individual creditor. Could, in theory, he sort of take 60 million of that, pay the debt to the administrators, and then walk away with 20 million? Would that be something that he could potentially do?
Potentially, yes. It would depend upon who he owes money to on that stadium. If there's a sort of charge registered there, you know, sort of mortgage or a stadium, and they will get sort of first bite of the 80 million in that scenario. They'd have to pay off the outstanding mortgage. But if he owns the club, he would be within his rights to do whatever he wants to do with the sort of surplus after paying off any of the debts related to the stadium if it is sold.
Right, okay, that's good then. So I'm just trying to sort of go over the timeline of how we got into this situation. I mean, obviously this is sort of all stemmed from this amortization policy thing that's brought it all about. You know, you obviously yourself are a chartered accountant, you know, and we're hearing a lot that this is about his accounting practices weren't in line with FRS 102. So it's been, I think, a bit confusing, sort of, well, why have the AFL signed it off? And then why have they sort of gone back and backtracked and said it's not? Can you sort of elaborate on what the amortization policy is? Because Mel Morris, obviously, we've only heard it off him, and he's not an accountant. Obviously, he's more an investor than an accountant.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate at all on that? Is there anything you can do?
I'll try as best I can. I'll kind of caveat by saying that although I am a chartered accountant, I don't deal with much of sort of the actual sort of filing and sort of statutory accounts. It's more kind of, I work sort of solely on the insolvency side of things. But essentially, the amortization policy is you would have, whenever you have an asset, you will depreciate that asset over a period of time. So you'll recognize the cost of it over a period of a length of time, because, you know, if you have a stadium, you use that for more than 1 year. You don't put the entire charge into your sort of profit and loss account as a cost to that season. You would spread it over the life of using that asset. And I think the issue sort of stems here from the policy that Derby County Football Club have used in their accounts for the amortisation. It is not in line with the EFL, and that's probably about as much on it as I know, unfortunately. I know that people who sort of follow the Price of Football podcast, they've gone into a lot more detail on that, and I think they know a lot more about it than I do. But yeah, I think essentially that's the key issue, is what Derby County are doing in their accounts doesn't tie in with what the EFL obviously wants to see.
Yeah, so I think it's a strange one. I think it depends whose side you take. Some people have gone, well, you should have done it, you know, right first time, etc. But then the EFL signed it off, you know. I think both parties really are at fault, I guess, if you like. I think, you know, they're both to blame, you know. And I think it definitely sort of should have been, I guess, dealt with a lot better. So going back to the club, I mean, do you think it would be an easy sale?
I think the good news to start with is that there seems to be sort of genuine interest. You know, I think I've seen reports suggesting that, you know, the administrators think not at 95% likelihood of achieving a sale for the club, and that is, you know, very, very high, certainly higher than I've seen in these sort of scenarios. The big issue is whether that's actually sort of genuine interest in the club, or just a lot of tire kickers who, you know, just want to finance information, do a bit of sort of sniffing around some financial information on the club. You know, I think the phrase the administrator said when they were appointed is that it won't be easy, but it's not insurmountable. And I think there are a number of difficult issues here. You obviously got to, the new owner's got to come in and meet sort of EFL owner and director's tests. Mm. You've got the fact that there are points deductions, not only from the administration, but also from the other matters that are ongoing at the club, which obviously reduce the attractiveness to a potential buyer. But I think at the same time, what you do have in Derby County at the moment that, say, you didn't have with Wigan when they went into administration sort of last year, was where you now have fans back at games. You actually have a lot more money coming in terms of, you know, match day sales, merchandising, that sort of thing. And that's going to obviously help the administrators to fund trading that business on for a period of time, which gives them some more time to then go through the process of sort of analysing potential bids, marketing the club to find a new owner. So I guess to answer the question of, is it going to be an easy sale? Probably I agree with what the administrator is saying, which is that it's not going to be easy, but certainly I think there is a sort of reasonable prospect that the sale, there will be a sale, because, you know, from an administrator side of things, as soon as they know that it's unlikely to be a sale, you're unlikely to achieve these sort of objectives of the administration. And they then have to think about what they do and their duty to creditors. So I think the fact that it's in administration would certainly highlight that there is a good likelihood of there being a sale.
And how long do you sort of think the process could take at, well, I suppose at a minimum, I guess?
So administrations normally have to be completed within 12 months. So the law is, when a company goes into administration, this breathing space they're given is a maximum 12-month period. That can be extended with the permission of the courts or the creditors. However, in this sort of situation, the longer an administration would go on, because you'd have effectively the administrators who are running the club and trying to fund trading that club until they can find a new buyer, the longer it goes on, the more difficult that becomes, because, you know, there's only so much money that can come in through the door.
Yeah.
And if the club is trading at a loss, then it's difficult to justify trading on if there's no buyer. So it's very much a sort of how long is a piece of string question. Obviously, they'll want to get a buyer in as soon as possible, because it gives the club some sort of certainty. And it sort of gives them a chance to sort of build a sustainable future. but it is very much dependent upon the marketing process they have to go through. And it will be sort of an extensive marketing process because they have a duty to get the best price for the assets. And then it kind of goes through the EFL process of do they agree with the new owners? From there, I can't remember how long sort of the Wigan administration took, but it was certainly a good few. We're talking months rather than sort of weeks, I would suspect.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I've been told then as well, someone said to me the other day that they've got 8 weeks to sort of sort out who all the creditors are. Is that sort of like, that's how long it has to take, or is that how long we can expect it to take?
Yeah, so there's, I think what potentially they're referring to is what's called the administrator's proposals. Hmm. And this is quite an extensive document that is prepared and sent out to the creditors of Derby County, which they will then approve. And basically what it's setting out is their strategy for how they plan to achieve one of the objectives of the administration. Mm. They are required to send this out to creditors within 8 weeks of being appointed, which I think takes us through to 17th of December.
Yeah.
My time on before get the call. And then that will be approved by the creditors shortly after it's sent out to them. Within that, and part of the process of the initial information gathering once you're appointed as administrators, is getting what's called a document that's called a statement of affairs. And this is a document that's prepared by the directors. It's a statutory requirement for them to actually do this and provide it to the administrators. And it's a list of the assets of the club and also who they owe money to. And in terms of who they owe money to, the creditors, it is literally a chapter and verse of, you know, I owe company A this much money, company B this much money, club A this much money. So that's also prepared for the administrators. That is also filed at company's house, so that then goes on the public record, and that's obviously quite important because that will give an indication of what the debts are, how the debts will all sort of rank within that order of priority I spoke about earlier, and then that kind of sets almost the floor price for someone coming in to actually take on the club, because you then get an idea of what you have to pay to meet the football creditors rule. Yeah. And avoid that for a 15-point deduction.
Yeah. So what's the best case scenario then if you're an administrator?
So I think it's a really tricky one because obviously as an administrator, your duty is to get the best price for the assets effectively. Yeah. And find a buyer for the club. So I think the best case scenario really is you have, but at the same time, sorry, you're, although you have this football creditors rule, mm. from the administrator's perspective, if the best offer for the club doesn't meet that rule and there's going to be creditors getting less than 25p in the pound, but it's the best price available, from the administrator side of things, that's the best price and they would have to take it. But obviously from everyone else's side of things, Derby County, you know, that wouldn't be the best scenario because you'll end up breaching that rule and having a further deduction. So I think the best case scenario for everyone would be, you know, a buyer found for the club, who's paying enough money to meet the football creditors rule to avoid that further deduction. The club survives and is in a position to actually build a sustainable future with some new owners in who are presumably committed to taking the club forward.
And what's the worst case?
So the worst case scenario is effectively you would have a situation where there's no buyer at all for the club, so no one wants to actually come in and take on the prices, can't be agreed. As I said earlier, the administration would normally end automatically after 12 months, could be extended if there is some genuine reason for it. So if there's a buyer who is there, but it hasn't been finalised.
Yeah.
But if there is a point where there is no buyer for this club, it's unlikely that the club can be traded on indefinitely by the administrators. And what you're looking at is a situation where that club would then go into liquidation, which is a terminal process where the company would actually cease to trade and would be a case of, yes, yeah, so it ceased trading and Derby County would effectively at that point no longer be a trading club to actually play and fill any league fixtures.
Right, okay. But that's worst case. So
that is worst case, yeah. So hopefully that doesn't happen, but that's basically sort of what we're trying to avoid here.
Here's now is your chance to make or break it for Derby fans. What do you think the probable outcome will be? Bearing in mind, there is apparently six interested parties. What do you think the probable outcome will be for Derby County?
I think the fact that there are six interested parties is very good news. Yeah. Obviously, personally, I've had no experience of selling a football club and dealing with football club insolvency. But at the same time, when you have other scenarios where you've got a business in distress that has a potentially viable future, I've not come across many scenarios where you've had this many interested parties or talking about sort of a 95% chance of having a new owner. You know, how much of that is tire kickers, that I don't know. But I would say, I think you've got a club that's steeped in history here. And if there is sort of six potential buyers, and chances are there is a real potential to agree a deal with one of them. And although I can't predict the future, I think it would be very unlikely if you've got that much interest to not have someone taking on the club.
So we're going to take that as positive then.
It's so difficult because obviously when you work in insolvency, you're so used to being pessimistic about these kind of things and trying to look at things with sort of a glass half empty almost. But at the same time, I think with football, it's just one of these industries where people want to own clubs, and there's that sort of real that sort of nice thing about actually being a club owner. And I think people are interested and buy into that, and it's all about hopefully having someone who takes on the club and actually, you know, has the best interest of Derby County fans in place.
Yeah, I mean, Mel Morris said an interesting thing. He said there isn't many football at club owners left, but clearly there is, you know. When you look at it like that, you go, well, actually, there's been, because I mean, he said there's not many people that want to own a football club. Then when the next line was, well, we've got 15 interested parties, which has now been narrowed down to six. So it's not all doom and gloom then, you know.
Absolutely.
I think in the situation that we are in, do you think that administration was probably the best sort of thing that we could have done? Or do you reckon he could have paid it off and not been in the situation? No.
I think that's a difficult one to answer. And that's obviously, you know, a personal sort of preference on the directors, people in charge of the club, because I know there's been a lot of talk about how Mel Morris could have potentially sort of carried on funding the club. And as with any sort of company, you know, there is a point where a director, you know, yes, it's their club, but they're not inclined to fund something indefinitely. And I think if you're at a point where you can see almost that, if you're putting money in, you're potentially going to be losing it, and someone's throwing sort of good money after bad, then you can see why someone potentially would say, actually, let's put it into an insolvency process. You know, I don't have all the information, so I can't potentially say whether or not it was or wasn't the right thing. I think what we'll see over time is the outcome of the administration will probably answer that question, because if you have someone that takes the club on, and actually, you know, is really passionate about driving it forward and acting in the best interest of the club on a long-term basis and helps it build a sustainable future, then, you know, arguably it probably was the right call to go into administration. I think it's sort of outcome dependent, which is probably not the best answer, but that's where I see it.
Just finally then, the something that I've heard recently, I've never heard in my life before, and it sounds like something you'd eat, but force majeure.
Yes.
There's been murmurs that we could sort of go down that route. You know, I know Wigan, I believe, tried it, but the EFL didn't want to hear it. But Mel Morris has obviously stated that he lost £20 million pound due to COVID. You know, and administrators have also obviously, I think, tipped at the same thing as well. Could that be a route where they possibly, well, first of all, what is it, force majeure, if you know? And two, could they possibly go down that route?
Yeah, so I think what they're referring to is I think there's a method of challenging the automatic 12-point deduction when a club goes into administration if the reason for the administration is what they call a force majeure reason.
Yeah.
And I think the argument that Wigan administrators ran was that with the COVID situation and the impact that had on the finances of the club, that should be a reason why it was beyond the club's control that it went into administration and they shouldn't get the 12-point deduction. Obviously, that was that didn't sort of pass, and the EFL sort of enforced the 12 points. The administrators are going to look at that, because if they can challenge successfully the 12-point deduction, it automatically makes the club more attractive, because you don't have that there. I guess it's a legal question, and it's a case of if the costs of, you basically have to weigh up the cost of challenging the ruling versus the benefit to succeed in challenging the ruling. So the uplift in value of the club as a result of not having that 12-point deduction. So you do a cost benefit sort of exercise first of all to see if it's actually worth challenging the ruling. I think the fact that they found against Wigan and they didn't say it was force majeure when the administrator of Wigan challenged the ruling probably doesn't work particularly well in the favour of Derby County, but I think it's a legal question, definitely one they would explore, because if they can overturn it, then you are looking at a more attractive proposition to a potential buyer.
Brilliant. Scott, thank you very much for your time today. You've actually, you know, you've made me feel a lot more positive now about this situation. I hope my listeners have also feeling a little bit more positive now as well. So thank you very much for doing that. I really appreciate your time.
No problem at all. So thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity. And yeah, it's a difficult scenario, a difficult time. And I appreciate it's not ideal at all for Derby fans. But I think it wouldn't be in a rescue. This is a rescue procedure. This is designed to try and rescue the club. So hopefully there will be some positive news in hopefully the not too distant future.
Oh, brilliant. That's what we love to hear. So that was Scott Bevington there from PKF Francis Clark Accountants. I hope he's made you feel better. That there could be, you know, there is some positives to come out. Hopefully, I did pick up some positives about that interview. So that's a good thing. Obviously, for now it's just a waiting game. See what comes out, and hopefully, you know, obviously with six interested buyers, and it sounds like we should get someone to hopefully take over the club. And we're hearing reports that Gary Cook used to be involved in Manchester City. He's involved, you know, he's I think leading the charge is what I've heard. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we move forward as a club. And whether it's League One or the Championship next season, I will still all be there. Let's move on to football. No, let's move on to football. So obviously I've not done one really. I did do one after the Stoke game with Sal last show. So we'll move on then to Sheffield United then yesterday. 1-0 loss in the last minute. Billy Sharp penalty. Keller Roos red card. Oh, I think yesterday was one of them games. You know, I felt we created more. Sheffield United had more of the ball. They sort of worked it around a bit. They were using Billy Sharp a lot, you know, over the top balls for chase. But I think we had the better chance. I think Jagielka hit the post. Lawrence hit the post. But I think it was sort of one of them. When you looks out. But, you know, fans, again, were insane yesterday. Absolutely incredible. Never stopped, you know. Just that's how we've got to be for the rest of the season. But I'll talk about the Keller Roos red card because you know, you guys know how much I love Keller Roos. So the way I saw it, I've seen it back, and actually, I'm surprised I've not seen him get as much stick as I thought he would. You know, which is bizarre, really, because normally he lets a goal in, that's it. But looking back at it, and the ball comes in over the top, and Sharp's ahead of Jagielka. Roos starts high up. Now, he's being asked to play high up. He's being essentially asked to be a sweep keeper. That's the way we're playing because we're playing out from the back. So he's already probably at his 12 on his penalty spot by the time that ball's coming through. He sees Sharp's in behind Jagielka. Jagielka's not catching him. Comes out. Sharp's knocked it to the left. And obviously, he's, you know, Roos, I suppose, hasn't really wiped out, but he's caught his leg and has gone down. But the ball goes to Ben Osborne. Jagielka is then backtracking behind Roos. And Byrne was with Osborne on the left-hand side. Empty net. It looks as if he's going to shoot before the ref blew the whistle. Now, for me, it's a foul, definitely. If the ref wants to give it a foul, fair enough. It's not a red card. For me, I understand why he's given it. But for me, that's not a red card. I know some people are going to disagree. Yeah, it was last man. No, he wasn't. Jagielka's behind him. Was it a goal-scoring opportunity? Yeah, it was. But the ball went to Osborne. You know, if he goes round him, we've got to look. You've got Byrne there because that ball goes to the left-hand side. So if Kel doesn't touch him and he stays on his feet, he's knocked that round Kel. You've got Byrne there covering and you've also got Jagielka behind Kel Roos. So, yeah. It's not, for me, I didn't think that was a red card. Their goal penalty, Davis, I'm not quite sure what he was doing. He jumps up, put his arm in the air. I think they were that knackered, that exhausted from being bombarded for 30 plus minutes. And it just, one of them lost his head for a second, put his hand up and just touched and tipped the ball. Blatant handball. You can't really deny it. And apparently, you know, but I think we can't blame any. Well, we're not going to blame anybody anymore. You know, these players are fighting for everything, playing as a team, doing everything they can to get this victory. And to get these 3 points week in, week out, doing everything they can to scrap and fight, to stay in this league, to stay and try and avoid relegation. They don't want League One next season. As Scott was saying, you know, there's potential now that if we can use this force majeure thing, that we actually only get a 9-point deduction with 3 suspended. So there's hope. And I think if we can get that, then yeah, we've got everything we need to stay up, apart from one thing. We need a striker. So we need a goal scorer. You know, Tom Lawrence, you know, he's normally one for getting 9 or 10 goals a season. He needs to up that. And I think, you know, he came close right at the end of the game to getting us a point, but hits the post. For me, Baldock, he's never been a prolific goal scorer. Just hasn't. And I'm not sure what he's offering us at the moment, to be honest. Yeah, he makes some nice runs, but we're never finding him. So for me, I'd personally go back to the false nine and use Lawrence, Jozwiak and Sibley and Ravel in that midfield four and have them interchanging. For me, I think that'll work. It worked well against Forest. Yeah, I mean, he got one goal, but we created a lot more chances. And I think with a little bit better decision-making, We could have beaten Forest 2 or 3 goals to nil, but those are things we have to learn on. I think some people were saying Lavelle Morrison wasn't really doing much. I think Morrison got a knock right at the start of the first half. Near the start of the first half, he did look a bit sort of leggy after that. So whether he was struggling with that, I'm not sure, but it is what it is. So we just keep fighting, guys. That's all we can do. As fans, we keep going every game. We go, you know, the way fans have come together, buying extra tickets, buying extra merchandise, just keep anything that can put money into the club. Just keep doing this. We've got Reading at home on Wednesday. Now, midweek games are, you know, notoriously known for having lower crowds. Let's change that. Let's get everyone there. Let's see if we can get a full house if possible. Obviously, I know guys have got work commitments and things like that on a Wednesday, so not everyone's going to be able to go. That's fine. But let's just get as many people there as we can. And let's hopefully, you know, let's go get another win at home. You know, if we get another win at home, we come off minus two. We're on plus one. That's a start. We're on positive points. You know, this is doable right now. You know, I can't remember exactly what we were when Rooney took over, but we were still in the bottom of the league and we survived. Rooney's a fighter. Showed that last season. Yeah, the performances, I guess, weren't great, but we survived. Doesn't matter how, but we did it. We can do it again because this team's got heart. This our manager's got heart. He's got fight, you know. And I just think, you know, if we keep battling like we can, the fans behind them. At the end of the day, guys, we've got nothing to lose, have we? So let's just go out there, give everything we can as fans, get right behind the players and see if we can go against Reading and get all 3 points. So that's me done, guys. That's my podcast done with. Just a bit of a different one here. I just thought let's get some talk about the administration, the processes, outcomes, things that, you know, because I just don't think there's been a sort of clear understanding of what the actual procedure is. Hey, it'd be nice if Mel sold his stadium and paid off some of the debts. That'd be good. Can you imagine that? Here you go, there. You can have some of the money I owe you. You know, HMRC paid. Oh, just like that. Whether it happens or not, I don't know, but I think that might be a good way of getting around this stadium thing, because obviously, as I said, there's talk to Gary Cook, who I believe was America's women. This was talked about in May. However, I was told about, I personally was told about it about March time, April time, that he was involved. And, you know, I just take it as face value then. But if it comes off, it comes off. But this club's now on a proper rebuild. As I said before at the start of the show, this is the rebuild stage now. We've got nothing to lose as a football club, apart from the football club itself, which, listening to Scott, doubt it will happen. So that's positive, real positive. So let's go out there, week in, week out. Let's perform as fans, just as the players perform on the pitch. Let's give everything. So remember, guys, you can follow me on Twitter, at Ramswriter, on Facebook, Ramswriter Podcast, Instagram, the Ramswriter Podcast, TikTok, and the Ramswriter Podcast as well. If you want to join me on TikTok, see some goalkeeping videos. As always, guys, like, share, subscribe. And I shall see you guys next time. And as always, come on, Derby. Steve Bloomer's watching.